that the main and fundamental topic of the festival is Zion. It is has many meanings, many understandings, but this is the source of inspiration of the Jewish Culture Festival, and the whole series of lecture series is devoted to Zion. And we're happy to have Ruth Calderon, Dr. Calderon, whom you can Google easily. And I remember she was a fantastic speech when she was an MP at the Knesset. You can Google, you can find it on YouTube. So we are particularly proud as organizers.
Krakow. Okay, I, as a director of a Jewish culture festival, I'm a Zionist. And all my people and all the festival is staying together with Israel since the beginning to the last day and the last breath. So I want to make it clear, since the beginning till the end. So we are so, and Zionists, of course, we can understand differently. But Zionism możemy rozumieć różnorako. So I'm so proud. Jestem bardzo dumny, że dzisiaj gościmy wśród nas. I forgotten about our beautiful translator. They are confused because I'm using English, I'm using Polish, and używam polskiego, angielskiego. Oni nie wiedzą z jakiego na jaki tłumaczyć. Tłumaczcie z jidysz na hebrajski. To jest bardzo proste. Translate from Yiddish to Hebrew. So, więc tak po polsku jednak. Przepraszam.
Okay, I'll speak Polish, you know. So once again, we are really honored to have Dr. Ruth Calderon, who will bring us closer to the contemporary image of the only democratic country in the Middle East.
So we are so proud that Dr. Ruth Calderon is among us. And he will tell us a little bit more, if not a little bit, so definitely more, about this only democracy in the Middle East called Israel, called also Zion. So, ladies and gentlemen, panie i panowie, przywitajmy bardzo serdecznie. This is Ruth Calderon.
Good Krakow water. Welcome everyone, and thank you Janusz for inviting me and for the generous introduction. Thank you my translator, and thank you all for coming. Can I sit down or should I stand up?
Whatever you want.
Whatever I want. Okay, I'll try standing up. If I'll get tired, I'll sit down. First of all, I want to speak in praise of the achsania of this building. It is the custom in Jewish culture to start a lecture saying thank you to the host or to the place. So this place used to be the Bet Midrash, the house of study, and people would come, Jewish people would come to study Talmud and Torah here. It's very beautiful. I understand from Janusz it was renovated. And I feel privileged to come back here and talk to you again about Jewish study. I want to also praise the festival and Krakow. This Jewish festival is very special in its spirit, in the sense that like Krakow before the war, it is a total public space filled with Jewish culture, some of it secular Jewish culture and some of it religious Jewish culture, and there's no tension between the two, or at least I didn't feel any. There's some kind of collegial feeling of togetherness between the religious and the cultural options of being Jewish. And the festival, the way I see it, is very strongly a cultural festival, and that is something you don't find anymore so much in the Jewish world. And I want to go into the two options of understanding Judaism today in the world, and it is very generally in North America, Judaism is looked at more as a religion, and in Europe, and Judaism is looked at more as a culture, and in Israel, it's both, and there's always a tension. So I'd like to look into that in a minute. But first, this opportunity and great, how do I say, pleasure of walking the streets of Krakow and around here, feeling what I call the Jewish hum. Like there's a that you get into, and not only it is not only Jewish when you walk into an institution or a lecture or a show. The streets are filled with letters and names and food and music, and you feel the hum. You're inside something that is alive and dynamic and Jewish, and that when that happens in an area that you live in, you feel covered with it or enveloped in it. And this is the Jewish cultural feeling or option that, again, I'll talk about more in depth. But before that, I want to say I am a product of a mixed marriage between Sephardi and Ashkenazi Jews. The Sephardi Jews came from Spain to Bulgaria, Turkey to Israel. The Ashkenazi Jews came from Galicia to Germany, from Germany to Israel, and in Jerusalem when it was in seas of the British, my parents met, and the rest is our history. The Ashkenazi side of the family, although they speak German and they were brought up in Germany, if you scrub it a little bit, it's really Polish and Galicianery. And the term to be a Galicianer was something that was talked about at home. It was like a term. And only when I came here, thanks to my friend Michelle, I saw her here somewhere, Michelle, and thanks to Janusz, and 2 years ago to the festival, it was a term that I couldn't place in reality, and now I'm beginning to understand. When in our family they said Galicianer, they meant someone that is clever, that understands the world and can see opportunities, that is creative in making connections, that is very alive, and it is both said about business people, that's half of our family, that is good in business, and also said about intellectuals and scholars, the other half of the family, or artists, that the same Galicianery ability or talent is something very creative and very very in the world, not outside of the world. And it is almost, it was for me, almost unbelievable that I can actually walk in the streets of that myth and understand where they came from, and it's very moving for me. So, I want to go back to the days before the Second World War, when Krakow is, and the area of the Jewish quarter is filled with different Jewish communities. The two big ones that I know about and I want to think about, one is the ultra-Orthodox traditional Jews dressed in black and white and with the hats and the yarmulkes and doing the tradition, building sukkah in Sukkot, or doing tashlich on the Visala on Yom Kippur, and going to shul and studying, the Jews that we still see or we see again. And the other community that is my spiritual ancestors are the secular cultural Jews, also known as spiritual Zionism. There's political Zionism by Herzl that said we must have a homeland to save the Jews. We need a political power. We need to be sovereign. That is the Herzl way. And because of the Holocaust, the Herzl way won, and it is the leading Zionism in Israel today. I apologize to the translator. I say many words. I'll try to breathe more. The other option of Zionism that is not, it's not instead, it they live side by side, is the Echad Ha'am. Asher Ginzburg is a thinker that worked and was writing in Russia. He was an autodidact. He didn't go to university. His sponsor was Vysotsky from the T. And he came up with a new concept of the time. It's the time of enlightenment. And many, many, many people and Jews come out of the closed communities of the shtetl. They want to go out. They want to dress like everyone else. They want to go to universities. They want to be part of, to be Europeans, to be citizens of the world. Those young people that were raised in the cheder and the yeshiva and the shtetl stand on the threshold of the new world, and they are perplexed. They don't know what to do. If they walk out and assimilate, they are losing their tradition and who they are, but they can be with everyone else and be Russians or Poles or Ukraine or whatever, wherever they live. If they go back to the shtetl, they feel that everyone is out there and life is out there and that they are giving up life. And they are like between two worlds. Echad Ha'am, Asher Ginzburg, came up with a concept that is not completely new because other people thought about it. And the concept is Judaism as a nationality and not as a religion. Those young people that are coming out of the shtetl, they are not religious anymore. They don't think of themselves as religious people, but they do want to stay Jews. They want to keep their culture. They want to keep their history and heritage. They want to go forward into the world, but stay Jewish. And the concept, this spiritual Zionism, talked about knowing, being to study and to be a scholar, not just a scholar, to be aware and to know where you come from, to study your Bible, Mishnah, Talmud, Kabbalah, Hasidut, to know it, the prayer book. But even the ones that are still religious can go out and stay religious. The ones that are not anymore religious can have a Jewish life that is culture. And they were, Echad Ha'am was the big teacher of Bialik and Brenner and Chernichovsky and Feuerberg and many Tel Aviv streets today that we walk on, that thought of the idea of building a total Jewish environment in Israel one day where you can live your name, your street name, the newspaper, the music you hear on the radio, the names of government. Memshala is a word that is taken from rabbinic literature. The Ministry of Defense in Hebrew is Misrad HaBitachon. Bitachon, to be, bitachon, to trust God, is taken from a word from the rabbinic literature and is used again in today's world. So a lot of the new cultural Jewish world is reusing or giving new life and new meaning and words to the ancient, like echoing the classic and the ancient books and words in today's everyday life. So they didn't have a state yet at all. Asher Ginsburg, Echad Ha'am, didn't even think that it is necessary to have sovereignty. He thought that in Israel we need to have Merkaz Ruchani, a spiritual center that will give cultural services to the whole world, but it's not necessary that it will be sovereign in a state. Bialik and the others are Zionist in a way that they also want to have, of course, the times are beginning to be difficult for Jews. Most of them come to Palestine, Eretz Israel, before the Second World War, and they begin to build the state of Israel and the city of Tel Aviv as the first Hebrew city. They call themselves Hebrew culture. Hebrew not only as a language, a movement for Hebrew culture, not only as a language, but Hebrew as a nationality, that you are a Hebrew. My father's passport in Bulgaria said Hebrew instead of Jewish, as that's your nationality. In Krakow, those, the movement of Chovevei Tzion, the students of this man, Asher Ginsburg, Echad Ha'am, started schools, kindergartens, and they thought that if they want to educate their children to stay Jewish, even if they are not religious, they need to teach them since they are very young. And so they started kindergartens and primary schools and gymnasia and a newspaper and books and teacher seminars and so on that were all in Hebrew. They tried to learn the language and read and write and teach children since a very early age to have their national language. And at some point they changed their movement's name to Tarbut. Tarbut in Hebrew is culture. And there were a chain of famous cultural Jewish schools called the Tarbut schools. One of them was here in Krakow. In Poland, altogether there were 45,000 students that went to Tarbut schools, Jewish secular cultural schools. Again, they were not secular in a way that they are against religion. They did not have any violence or any tension with the religious Jews that kept the traditional way of living. But the Tarbut schools brought up a new kind of a Jew that I feel I am a product of. A Jew that is very much Jewish, but not religious. Again, maybe religious in the heart, but not following all the halachic rules. And that is why I wanted to say in the beginning that this festival, in my view, is like bringing back to life something of that Tarbut movement and culture. And once someone in an American magazine asked me, what would I do if I would be the Minister of Education in Israel? And I said that the first thing I would do, I would bring back the Tarbut schools. Because those Tarbut schools, both in Poland and Europe, Eastern Europe, Russia, and also in South America, have been a great success. And people, I know Meira's parents went to Tarbut school. People that came to Palestine, to Israel, after a Tarbut school were fluent in Hebrew, and the Hebrew history, and the Hebrew culture, and whether they're religious or not, they can build a total environment that is positively Jewish. So that is one thing about Krakow that I don't know exactly where it was, and I've never heard much about it, but I read the memoir of a man that grew up in Krakow before the war, and he said that he was part of the Tarbut Gymnasium, high school, and they were in very good, there was kind of a acceptance and living together, tolerance between the religious and the secular Jews, and that is something that you don't see too much today, and I think is missing, and I think is one of the beauties of this festival. The second thing that I want to say about what I said before, Judaism as a culture, Judaism as a religion. For different reasons, and I'm not a historian, I'm just watching it. In America, most of the Jews see themselves as Americans in nationality. They are proud patriots of America, and yet they feel, of course, Jewish, but Judaism in America, what is the way to celebrate your own nationality is as a religion, like other people would be American Italians or American Swedes or French people and so on. So in America, what I see, and I'm not a specialist, is that the American Jews, the majority are Americans, and some go to Orthodox shuls, some go to Reform, Conservative, Reconstructionist, and Renewal communities on the Friday or on the Saturday or on holidays, but in everyday life, they are Americans. In Europe, there is, and the American way is a melting pot. It's a country of immigrants, so anyone who comes from wherever you come, if you want to and you are a positive person and you're willing to learn and to be part, you're welcome into the melting pot, and after a month you can feel American. You have a flag, you eat turkey on Thanksgiving, your child is taken by the yellow bus to school, and you're part of the big dream of the new world of America. I need a little water. By the way, in America, it would be acceptable that there's a flag in the classroom and you say your pledge of allegiance. Whether you are religious, not religious, it's a national American, I don't know if to say national, it's an American thing, and before a basketball game, you stand up and you hear the national anthem, and there's a patriotism that I sometimes envy. In America. In Europe, the identity of people is built in a different way, and the way Europeans build their identity generally was around the culture. And so some people are religious and some people are not. Most of the people were Christian. They would belong to this church or the other church or a different church. But nationality, if you think of French people, it's very clear. Culture is the product of knowing your great books, knowing the philosophy, the French poetry, the French literature, music, or in Russia, you know your, again, the theater, you know the plays, you know Dostoevsky or Tolstoy, or you are proud, you know that you are proud of that culture. Of course, you use the language. It has to do with the customs, with food, with the way you dress, with the geography. But in Europe, the way to be a cultured person, to have an identity of the place, is to be knowledgeable of the great books. And a Russian person and maybe a Polish person will not be proud of themselves if they know nothing of the great poets, philosophers, writers, and so on of their people. That way of owning a nationality, whether you're religious or not, was the base for Echad Ha'am and the Tarbut movement to say, we also, although we are Jews within this people or the other people, we are also a people. We also have the great books, the great book, Jewish bookshelf, and a person that wants to be, to respect their identity and to be a living, serious Jew needs to speak the language, be able to write and read in Hebrew, and that is something I'm always nagging my people in America, that Hebrew is the key. When you own Hebrew, you like have the key to the Jewish classic bookshelf, and nobody mediates it for you. You can read it yourself, and when you know the great books and you feel that you belong to them and they belong to you, you can renew them in your new way of reading it today. And that is, in my view, as a daughter to that movement of Tarbut, being a cultural Jew, being a spiritual Zionist. And Zionism, in that sense, is not just having a safe haven or having an army and having a great high tech, but making the street in Israel a living, total environment of Hebrew culture. In that Ham, that if you all visited, or you are very welcome to come and visit Israel, you just land in Israel, you feel that it is very Jewish, whether you're religious or not. It is in the street, it is in the public space. The challenge in Israel of Hebrew culture is in some ways even more difficult than the challenge overseas in America or in Europe. And that is because in the time of our first prime minister, David Ben-Gurion, there was a decision by him that the official Judaism or the official Jewish way in Israel will be Orthodox. And so everything official is run by or decided by the chief rabbinate in Israel. And I can understand why it made sense, but what happens when there is sovereignty and the public space is now run not by the Poles or the English or the Germans, but by Jews? In America, if you have three communities, Reform, Orthodox, Reconstructionist, and you have differences about how to celebrate a holiday or the Shabbat, you can be friends with people. You go to a place together. One walks into the Reform minion, the other walks into a different room, which is the Orthodox minion, and the third will walk into the Reconstructionist. They can all meet and have Dag Maluach, herring together afterwards and stay friends. There's no problem in having different opinions and still staying Jewish together. But when the dream, the vision of Zionism became a reality, now you have a state, and the decisions that you make on the street, whether the shops will be open or closed, whether there will be public transportation or not, whether on television they can show the Mondial football games or not on Shabbat, each decision is now an official, sovereign Jewish decision. And if different people think different things, someone has to cut and decide. And when the cut and decision is always Orthodox, many people, like me, feel that we don't have freedom of religion as a Jew in the Jewish state. The Muslims do have their way of getting married, being judged, being buried, and so on. The Christians do have the church in Israel, the different churches. But as a Jew, the only option to celebrate your Jewish marriage or bar mitzvah or different things or burial, the official way that you can have it is always only Orthodox. And if you are not Orthodox, for example, like me, if you would like not only the groom to talk on the wedding, but the bride also to say a few words and to do the ceremony in egalitarian way, that is not an option today in official Israel. And we have to go to Cyprus to get married in the city hall and then to bring the note from the lady in Cyprus that said, would you take this? Which is funny. It's like going into a Hollywood movie, because in Israel, in the Jewish language, that is not what you say under a chuppah. Then you bring that note to the Ministry of Interior Affairs and they write you as married. I believe that we are in the beginning of times of finding solutions to these things, but it's not yet there. And so the spiritual Judaism I was talking about is on one hand a great success, because you do feel that ham of Jewish culture in everything. When you grow up in Israel, there's no question if you are Jewish, there's no question about your Jewishness, and it is not just an official like line about yourself, but it has to do with every minute of your day. It's not just a weekend thing to be Jewish. It is school, it's kindergarten, it's Israelis know thousands of songs by heart, and the songs are usually filled with words and symbols and heroes and tales of ancient Bible and Mishnah and Talmud and so on. The Israeli time, you land in Israel in September, the Lonely Planet guide says to people to come to travel, they say, be careful in Israel in September. They have holidays. One day everything will be closed. There'll be no food. There'll be no restaurants. And we can't tell you which day it is because it moves by the moon. The other day, there will be no transportation. There will be no cars in the street. Children will be using bicycle in highways for one day, and you can't get to from place to place. What I mean to say is that, of course, I was describing Yom Kippur or Rosh Hashanah, the Day of Atonement, and the first day of the year. Whether you are religious or not, the street itself is celebrating. There is, for example, none of us uses a car on Yom Kippur, not because it is forbidden and not because it is religiously not allowed, because most of the people are not religious. We do it because we are Israeli and this is our culture. We are Israeli Jews and this is our culture. And there's a pleasure, there's a feeling of meaning in your life when you understand the codes of your own culture. When on 4 in the afternoon, every day since I was born, there's the special songs of 4 in the afternoon that give you a certain kind of feeling that you are at home. That on Thursday afternoon, because tomorrow will be Friday, going on to Saturday, Thursday afternoon is the day people go out and the work week is beginning to slow down. Friday morning, nobody goes to work and you go to a cafe and you get your weekend edition of the paper and you feel the weekend is beginning. And Saturday morning, where all the religious Jews go to shul, the non-religious Jews feel strongly that it is Shabbat. Even if the custom is not a religious one, it is very different from a Friday. You can't go wrong in Israeli Jewish time when it is Hanukkah, the festival of light. All the kindergarten kids will have little cardboard candles on their heads in the street. When it is Purim, the costume celebration of wearing costumes, everyone will be on the street. You'll go to a cafe. The waitress will wear waitress is also a man. The waiter can wear ears of a rabbit and a tail. It is out in the street and not only in the synagogue. The celebration is out there, and there's a strong feeling that you are, like when you're in France and you feel that there is French culture and music and food and customs, the same thing, and even more dense and rich happens in Israel. And in my eyes, in my view, it is success of spiritual Judaism alongside the great, I don't know if to say success, but achievements of having sovereignty, having an army, having industry and so on, and having a good economy, which is, of course, I'm very grateful for. The challenge in being secular in Israel is twofold. One side of it is the problem of ignorance. Many people like me that were raised in the public Israeli secular school were raised on a philosophy that is very that was built in the Ben-Gurion times by the first generation of educators, a philosophy that is from the Bible to national Zionism, from King David to David Ben-Gurion. There was a cut, like cut and paste, of studying a lot of Bible. We study from kindergarten to primary school Bible again and again, and we can quote, and I'm called Ruth, I know the book of Ruth, you know, people have names and the names of the street. Bible is very, very nochach. Present, thank you, in the Israeli culture and street. But on Bible, instead of teaching us the rabbinic era and everything that really happened in history, the writing of Mishnah, and then Talmud, and then Kabbalah, and Hasidut, and Jewish thought, all of that was taken, and the Jewish prayer book, all of that was put on the side, and they taught us a lot of Bible, and then Zionism. And there was an intention to create a new Jew. This is after a very hard time for European Jews, after the war and before the war, feeling of a lot of anti-Semitism. And they themselves wanted to create out of themselves a new kind of identity, a new kind of Jew. They wanted to be strong, to be people that are working the land, farmers, to be healthy, to be normal. Normal, I don't think they weren't normal before, but they looked at themselves. They want to be like the other people. And they educated us on a lot of values of work, of being connected to the world, to the land, of traveling around and walking and being people, you know, that you can get along in nature, something very kind of trying to build a Jew that is not a Luftmensch, that is not just an intellectual, but something very connected to the land, and spiritually to be connected to the Bible. When we had fighters and prophets and kings and sovereignty, and then the new Israel of Zionism. Now, whenever you try to build yourself in an artificial way and forget part of your history, when you would raise children not knowing their grandparents or some aunt, it's always will come to a dead end. There's no way to build an identity on your choice, only the nice grandparents and not the ones that we don't like. And out of that, my generation of Israelis and the generation after me came out ignorant in our own culture and history. We know a lot of Bible, then we know it's like you have the legs and you have the neck, but you don't have the stomach. And there was something I felt when I was a teenager, and I think when I left Israel for a year that we spent in Australia, and I started going to synagogue with my parents, I suddenly felt that something is terribly missing in my upbringing as a secular Jew in Israel, and I need this part to be complete. I felt that my parents that came from Europe have some kind of a part that I miss and I want to learn, and it is not Israeliness, it's Jewishness. And I started looking for places to study Talmud, Mishnah, the prayer book. I tried to go to religious places, but as a woman and as a secular person, I was twice removed from, I wasn't the right person to come and study. I saw then the film of Yentl, how Barbara Streisand is trying to be a Jewish scholar, and she acts as if she is a man, and I contemplated and thought that I cannot pass as a man and I have to find another way. But it took many years until I could find a place that would accept me for what I am and let me reclaim the pieces of my own spiritual past and personality in order to be completely myself. And I won't tell you the whole story because it was very long, but finally after my army service, I found a place where I could study as what I am, as a woman, as a secular person. I could study rabbinic philosophy and culture and the Talmud and Mishnah and Jewish history and thought, together with my friend Meira here, in a place called Oranim in the north of Israel. And I remember that the first classes, when they opened the Talmud, and I could read it and understand, I felt I was walking on clouds. I felt in love. I was like, I couldn't believe that this treasure that is so sophisticated and so interesting and so relevant to my life and so funny and so, the rabbis were so, I find them so smart in what it is to be human and so capable in giving me tools for real life, not just for history or something academic that I learned for writing essays. It was about how to be a person, how to be a friend, how to be a mother, and later on how to be a politician. How do we build a community in a healthy way? And all of that treasure, I felt like I'm walking into Alibaba's cave and finding treasures and I wanted to take them back home. I felt that my role, my mission is to bring all of this richness back to the secular world and let people enjoy it and use it both for their personal life and to build a richer culture in theater, in television, in politics, in poetry, in dance, and also in the schools, in the educational system. And so about 30 years ago, I've established a play of the first egalitarian Bet Midrash, like what this house used to be, house of study, a place of studying classic Jewish text. It's called Elul, it is in Jerusalem, and it was a project where we worked together, religious Jews together with secular Jews, men together with women from all different kinds, and we started a movement that is called the Jewish Renaissance or Hadshut Yehudit, renewal, but renewal in English, in American English, is something different. Today we call it Israeli Judaism, Yadut Israelit. And today this movement consists of 60 organizations where secular and religious Jews study together, sometimes alone and sometimes together, sometimes women with men, most of the time together in an egalitarian setting, studying the classic text as a culture in order to bring it back to our life and then bring it back to the Jewish public space. Again, as I said before, it is a challenge because politically we don't have an official standing and there's no official, the resources of the custom payer in Israel goes only to the mainly 95% only to an Orthodox place of study, but those, that movement and those places of study are beginning, I believe, to make a difference. And many of the Israeli writers, the Israeli poets, the Israeli television people, and the educators and the kindergarten teachers are now reclaiming their Jewishness of all ages and as their identity and culture. And what happened when I was young, that if you would ask young people, what are you? They would choose Israeli or Jewish. The secular people will say they are Israeli, and the religious people will say they are Jewish. Today, the spectrum, as we say, the line, people are standing on many more. It's not either or. It's not black and white. And most of the Israelis today will say, I am a Jew. I'm an Israeli Jew. I'm a secular Jew. I'm a cultural Jew. Or I'm an Orthodox Jew. I'm a religious Jew. But the word Judaism that used to be something that belonged only to the old world or to Orthodox religious people is we reclaim the term Jewish too. And I feel it is a base that can build an environment that it is much more in dialogue between religious and secular people and much richer in culture than just back to back. We are looking at the history and the past, and you are looking at the future and the present. I want to end with Jewish and democratic and with my vision. The issue of building Israel as a Jewish and democratic state is the issue that I started in the beginning with whether you see a Jewish state as a religious state of Jews or a national nation state of Jews. And the question whether you see Judaism as a word that describes a religion or Judaism as something that describes a nationality. The people that founded Israel and the Declaration of Independence says Israel will be Beit Leumi La'am HaYehudi Be'eretz Yisrael, a national home for the Jewish people in the land of Israel. A national home meaning everyone in the world who is Jewish has a home, whether they live in Israel or someplace else, they have a home. And they have the law of return. Whenever they want, they can come home. It is the nation state of all Jews in the world. The religious people can be religious in their home if this is their way. The other voice that we hear today, and there is, if you want, a cultural war between the two voices, is a voice that says, no, Israel is a Jewish state. It needs to be a religious state. In the Jewish state, there can't be airplanes going on Shabbat, there can't be public transportation, there can't be chametz on Pesach in a restaurant. You have to live under Jewish law because it is a Jewish state. The word Jewish does consist of the two meanings. So different people, especially in the Knesset, in the government, and in parliament, when people say Jewish state, it is a Jewish state and therefore it must, you can use the term Jewish as national and as religious. And the two meanings are making life in Israel as a Jew in tension today. And of course, it's very clear that I see Judaism as a nationality. And I, of course, would fight that any religious Jew, Orthodox, ultra-Orthodox, even anti-Zionist, that they should have their freedom to live and everything that they need in order to live their life in the full. But I'm not willing to make the public space and the rules of Israel become kitzoni, extremely religious in a way that I cannot travel on the Shabbat, or families that don't have a car cannot see their grandchildren, or that life will become scary for Israeli Jews that are not religious. The options of... So I read the Declaration of Independence as something that is inviting us to live a full Jewish life in our culture, and democratic in the sense that every citizen, whether they are Jewish or not, and the minority of 20% of Arabs that we have in Israel, and a smaller minority of Christians, everyone will have exactly the same rights as a citizen, but the public space will still have a Jewish hum, a Jewish smell, a Jewish taste. And therefore, I like the fact that our schools teach Jewish history and Jewish songs, and the Hebrew is the official language. I wouldn't like to live in a public space that is a dish that is indifferent to culture, and to have my culture only in my private space. I like the public space to be Jewish, but not Jewish necessarily in the religious way. I'll close and open if you have any questions. In saying that, coming back to Krakow is a very strong feeling of This is where our ancestors learned how to be cultural Jews, be religious Jews, live together, live in one hand as a minority in a place in Europe, in a way, in a place that there's so many beautiful things to be part of before it became scary and terrible and so on. And in another hand, to be able to live with fellow Jews without trying to make the other community exactly like yours. And in that sense, I'm taking something of Krakow and bringing it back to Israel, making me optimistic about our future as a Jewish state and Jewish culture. Thank you very much. If anyone wants to ask anything, thank you. I'm happy to go on for another 10 minutes. Please. Introduce yourself.
Orna Golan. I'm an Israeli attorney, and I really identify 100% with you. I used to live 30 years in the United States. I moved back, and I was in a shock to see that there is such a tension between the right movement, which is called Yemanim.
I'm asking you to get to a question.
Oh,
please.
Yeah, okay. It's not so much a question. It's like when you said spiritual Jew and spiritual life, I see it more as spiritual/traditional. So, because spiritual, it can go more into the deepness of also Orthodox Judaism. And what you claim is not the Orthodox, but spiritual/traditional.
Yes, I think, thank you. I think when they call themselves spiritual Zionism, they wanted to differentiate themselves from political Zionism. Because political Zionism, by Herzl, said, I'm not talking about culture and books. I want us to have a land and to be free people and to have our own government, which was very important. And they said, fine, you have that. But we also want to add the spiritual Zionism, that the land that we are going to build is not just a free land, democratic and good... I don't know what, transportation. We want it to be a Zionism that is spiritual, that is, even if we are not religious, we have a spirit, and we are sons of daughters of a long dynasty of rich culture. And so, of course, I think that goes together with Orthodoxy. I don't find myself in any negative feeling to Orthodoxy. I don't have the talent, so... I am a different Jew, but I would like the Zionism, now that we have, thank God, a homeland and an army and agriculture and all of that, to also have a great culture. Thanks. Yes, please.
I can speak loud.
Yeah,
oh.
We can have your voice. So introduce yourself.
Hello? Hi. Yeah, wow. My name is Ayal. I'm from Kibbutz Hanaton in Israel. I'm working in the same field that you are in. I wanted to ask you if you see that there's any changes in terms of budgets coming from the Israeli government promoting the work that you're doing. And if not,
what can be done?
Yeah.
Hanaton, the kibbutz Hanaton, is a kibbutz of the conservative movement.
Not anymore.
Not anymore, but it was built by the conservative.
In 1984, today it's a non-denominational egalitarian pluralistic Jewish space. Just to be translated.
Say a few words about Hanaton.
So I come from a kibbutz that was established by the conservative movement in 1984. It went through a lot of changes, and about 8 years ago, it redefined itself as a non-denominational, egalitarian space. There's people there that define themselves Orthodox, conservative, reform, secular, non-falling in any other category. It is a unique social experiment, which is working so far.
Is it polite to ask you, how do you define yourself?
I define myself as a halachically living Jew with a lot of issues with different categories.
Thank you. I like that.
And I would say that the majority of the people are in different spaces of that. But it's, to begin with, not a place that defines. Also, the prayer there is defined by whoever is leading the prayer. We have 11 people that have rabbinical titles, but not a rabbi out of choice.
Thank you. I'll go back to your question.
Thanks.
In many ways, I see you and the people in Hanaton and people like you as the hope of the future, that there is a new generation that grew up already feeling that it makes sense to be Jewish and not necessarily halachic in an orthodox way, and that you build a community and education that way. About resources from the government. When I was a Knesset member, I asked the Center of Information in the Knesset, you can ask questions and they give you the numbers, how much money is invested every year in Jewish education, and how much of it is invested in Orthodoxy, and how much of it in all the rest. And they talked about, I don't want to be wrong, I think 5.9 billion a year, and all of it invested in Orthodoxy. And I felt that was terrible because without resources, it's not possible to build education. The way to get that in democracy is to have Knesset members, to have politicians that care, that think it's important. The minority of Orthodox politicians work only on Orthodoxy, and they get very good results. The secular politicians, who are the majority, most of them grew up in an education of from the Bible to Zionism, and they don't really care. And so, like in feminism, the first generation has to raise awareness so women will feel it's important for them to vote. And only then they will fight for getting the votes. I feel my generation is working on raising awareness for Israelis to say, this is your culture, own it. You can do it, you can get married or do any ceremony in the way that is right to you. Your generation needs to find enough people to not be disgusted by politics, but go into politics and fight for it. When there are enough people that will vote for you, send you, because there's no way to go around. You know, we feel so disgusted by politics, so we don't go in, and our children don't go in, so other people go in. And there's no, if we want to live in democracy, that is the way to go. It is today a political issue, because there is already a generation that knows how to talk about it and how to study. We need more secular scholars, but there begins to be a generation of secular scholars. Now we need to be accepted as equals in our state. And that needs, if you would go to politics or any small politics in a city or town or university or big politics in the government, I'll vote for you. Yes, please.
This lady has a question. Yeah, hello, my name is Bettina. I just went out, you talk a lot about the sexualism and orthodoxy and so forth, but how do you see upon the different ethnicity within the Jewish community? I'm from Denmark, I was born in Denmark, but it was very kind of surprising when I was in Israel several times, the different ethnic divisions that was very strong, I felt, with the African Jews and
Middle Eastern Jews, the Jews from Arabic countries and from Europe.
And from Eastern Europe, Western Europe, you know, so forth, even though now there's not that much East and West. But it was just so present, and also with the 20% Arabic, yes. Israelis. So yes. How do you see upon when you speak about democracy, is it also an issue in your views?
Yes, thank you for the question. I think you are touching on the challenge of Israel, because Israel is a country of immigrants, but it did not choose to be a melting pot like America, but a nation state. So the people from the nation that are coming into Israel, there's already a difference between if you come from Poland or you come from Morocco. My father used to say to my mother's parents, whom didn't appreciate the fact that she married someone Sephardi and not Ashkenazi, he used to say, it's in humor, that every people get the Jews they deserve. So he thought the Bulgarian Jews are nicer than the German Jews because they're Bulgarians. So each Jewish community that came from a certain place comes with a culture, with a food, with what is done and what is not done. You know, our dining room was a place of tension between my mother's German way of eating dinner and my father's Bulgarian way. It's not the same, and there was a lot of tension. Sometimes it was funny, but it was very dynamic. That is happening in the big space of Israel, because different communities come in different ways, and always the ones that came first look down on the ones that came in the afternoon. You know, they are the first ones, and they only now came, and they look down at them, and the people that caught the places of power first, the Russians and the Polish Jews were the first, and they usually ran the country until the 70s, and everything was by them. And then when Jews came from the Arabic countries and Middle East, in the beginning it wasn't even in the plan that they will come. Because the Eastern Jews, the Western Jews from Europe, didn't know of them at all. The plan was to build an Ashkenazi Jewish state. But suddenly there aren't enough Jews, and the Holocaust, you know, half of the people are lost. And they started bringing Jews that they didn't exactly know how to take in. And a lot of the tension that we still live is part of that. Because each community comes with a logic, and the logic doesn't always work together. And the power, like everywhere, is by the people with the money or that came first and are holding the universities, the land, and so on. I believe that in the last two decades we're beginning to correct. We see the unfairness and we're beginning to correct. And there's a long way to go. Again, politics will help it. When people have today the majority of Eastern middle class has a strong political power, and they decide who, they have very strong power in deciding who will be the prime minister. And it will solve itself, I hope, that way. About the 20% of Arabic Muslims in Israel, Palestinians, they usually call themselves, that is even a harder challenge, because they are not only that they are not Zionist, they are anti-Zionist, and they are not yet accepting the state of Israel as a present legitimate entity. Some of them do and some of them don't. The ones that do, you know, have their citizen rights, not always in complete fairness, in education and in land, there's a lot of tension. But because some of the Palestinians in Israel are anti-Israeli, it's very difficult to build a healthy community. So when I was in parliament, we set a lot on equal land, education, and possibility to build houses in Arabic villages, and a lot of money was given to that and to the Bedouins. On the other hand, in defense, there's a lot of worry around different places in Israel that are sometimes anti-Israel. So that's a big challenge of living together with a minority that is not patriotic about the state itself. I think every question needs to be taken apart and looked at for itself. If you ask me what I think that every citizen should get exactly the same, how did I say it before? Right. Same possibility to be educated, to go into the university, to have all, but I can't tell you that it's completely fair today. When you are an Arab student, my daughter is in the university and many of her fellow students are Arab young women. They don't master Hebrew so well. Not everybody was happy to rent apartments to Arabs. It is a challenge because there's a war still in the Middle East. It's not, I don't see around myself hatred of Arabs, but it's not easy to be an Arab in Tel Aviv today. I believe that time, if we will, God willing, get to peace, that will, the difference will be, I think it is a gift. I enjoy and love the fact that some of the people I know are Arabs or I teach with, and I can learn Arabic, which is a sister language to Hebrew, and it makes Israel richer. But it is not easy yet when there's still a debate about the right to live in the land at all. I want to thank you very much and enjoy the rest of the festival. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you want another question and we'll finish?
Chciałbym bardzo, bardzo podziękować za Pani.
I would like to thank you very much for coming to Krakow. I would like to thank you very much for coming to Krakow and sharing your perspective and your story with us. Also your plans and the analysis of your life and our common future. This is very moving and extremely beautiful for me. And at the same time, I could acquire a perspective in which we can find out about a clear and more comprehensive way spirituality and culture should not be a part of religious organization only. But if we start thinking the way you do, I think there is a bright future ahead of us. Bright future and understanding. Thank you.
It's so special to hear it in Polish, and I hope I understood. Huh? If I understood you right, he was very gracious and thanked me for the speech. And you said that spirituality, I need my translator to make sure that I understood, that spirituality doesn't necessarily have to be part of religion. Does anyone, yes? Is that what you said? Thank you. That is a spirit that we don't hear enough of in Israel today, of secularity that is spiritual and cultural. I feel that this movement that I am a part of received that spirit from this place alongside other places in Europe. I believe in it, and I'm trying to build institutions that will show, that will educate people towards that in Israel. And I agree with you that this is the way to build an atmosphere of acceptance and democracy and culture together between Jews and non-Jews, both between European non-Jews and Arab non-Jews in Israel. And I thank you for what, if my father says that every people get the Jews they deserve, I thank you for what we received from you. Okay? Thank you and goodbye.